third week on one Mishnah.
That's wonderful.
Not even sure if we'll finish it.
That's great.
Okay, so we hear here on the Mishnah, in Perek Beis Mishnah Aleph. The Mishnah said, what's the proper path a person should choose? Kol shi tefaras le'asevet tefaras le'ayim adam. Spent a good week, a week and a half on that. Anything that's a p'era, a pride, an honor to Hashem, or to people, and to people. This is more where we're up to. Be careful in a light mitzvah, the same in a minor mitzvah, as you would a major one. Because you don't really know the reward that each one will get. And calculate what loss you're going to get in a mitzvah against what amazing reward you're going to get. And the small amount of enjoyment and reward, so to speak, that you get from an avera against the tremendous detriment that you'll get eventually. Look at three things, you won't come to avera. Da male male mucha. Know what is above you. Those are the three things. What are the three things? Ayin roya, seeing eye, the oizim shemas, a hearing ear, so to speak. And all your actions are recorded in a sefer, in a book. So we were holding more in the middle of the Mishnah. So it said, you should be careful in a mitzvah, a minor mitzvah like a big one. That's what it says. But a second later, it says, because you don't know the reward of the mitzvah. So wait a minute. A second ago, you said, be careful with the small ones and the big ones because we don't know the reward. If we don't know the reward, then how are we to know which ones are big and which ones are small?
Exactly.
Maybe giving a coin to tzedakah is bigger than fasting on Yom Kippur. We don't know anything about what they bring. So, that's an obvious question. So what are the big mitzvahs and what are the small ones? How are we ever to know? So, there are many different opinions on this matter. The Markevas of Mishnah and the Abarbanel, they say that it has to do with money. The ones that cost a lot of money are considered bigger ones, and the ones that are very cheap are considered smaller ones. Right? It just has to do with the amount of money that you're giving. The Rambam says that the opposite. It has to do with the perception of us, our perception and how we perceive the mitzvah. He says, a mitzvah like, he gives the example, the Rambam, of Simchas Yontif, being joyous on Yontif. So we think, okay, it's a nice thing, it's a very beautiful thing, but such a big mitzvah, you know, we're going to go out of our way to do it. They say from the Vilna Gaon, from the Gra, that he used to say the hardest mitzvah in the entire Torah to be Mekayim is Ach Sameach, right? The Yista Ach Sameach. You have to be only Simcha, only in Simcha for 8 days of Sukkot. You can't stop being Misimcha. He said, how could you do that? How could you be Simcha for 8 days straight? It's so hard. So you see that the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif is actually a big mitzvah. But people don't look at it like that. Mitzvahs like, let's say, tzitzis, tefillin, or, you know, things like that, people look at it with much more importance. Those are the things that we call big mitzvahs. However, obviously what he's saying is that we don't know the schar for any of them, and therefore you have to be careful to honor all of them. And the Iri says,
what about things like escorting the dead, doing taharas, things that you don't get reward for because the person's dead?
You mean a chesed shel emes?
Yeah.
Right. Those for sure are big mitzvahs, yeah. I mean, yeah. In the eyes of people, that's for sure a very, very big mitzvah because, like you said, you don't get any reward for it, so. And still it says in Mishnah that you have to do all the mitzvahs, you know, like you have the other guy on the other hand that gives $1 million to a Beis Medrash and they make a huge party and his picture's on the wall, you'd say like, you know, what type of mitzvah is that? It's a big mitzvah, but you know, he probably has every other thought in his mind. So, we don't know who gets big rewards and small rewards, therefore we are enjoying to do every mitzvah and to do them with simcha. The Meiri says that a mitzvah, also that a mitzvah that people look at in their eyes, small is the mitzvah, is the small mitzvahs. And he gives an example though. He said kiddush. He says like something like kiddush. So some people look at kiddush and come home and say, "Yo, my Jesus." I say a couple of words and I'm allowed to eat. I'm allowed to drink wine and then I say, "What?" He says, in reality, these few words create in our hearts such a deep faith. They're screaming, "Hashem created the world in 6 days and then He rested." And now we are remembering that every week. That it's basically, he says, taking like nature, that you know the world exists and everything, and throwing it out the window. And he says it's basically like a little Pesach, a little Pesach Seder every single Friday night. Pesach Seder, we sit there and we're like, wow, Hashem made the world and Hashem took us, you know, put us into Egypt and He took us out. So every Friday night you're saying, Hashem, You made the world and you're going through all these things. It's mamish like a tremendous scream that the Hashem runs the world. And that's considered a small mitzvah. So he said, you don't realize that the small mitzvah, quote unquote, like that, is actually a very, very big thing. Rav Nachman himself...
Yeah. Can you expand?
Expand on?
What you just said.
That Kiddush is a small mitzvah. That's in the eyes of some people, he's saying that there are perceptions of considered what categorizes the mitzvah as being minor or major. And so he says, Kiddush, in general, obviously, you know, Baruch Hashem, where, you know, like I'm going to say, like Rav Nachman himself, when he was in Kiddush, anyone that's kashur to his teachings and to his Talmidim that passed on and you've seen them, Kiddush by Breslov or Hasidim is something, it's a power, it's a, you know. Rav Nachman himself used to sit there and he would just be an utter dveikus and he would be like in crazy worlds right before Kiddush. And he said to his Talmidim afterwards, he said that he felt literally right when he was making Kiddush that his soul was going to just fly up and not come back down. He had to struggle to keep himself alive right before Kiddush. That's how intensely spiritual he felt by the time of Kiddush. I mean, I've been zechut to hear Kiddush from Rav Koenig many, many times, and his Kiddush is also, it's powerful, it's slow, it's in a different world. And I've heard other Breslover Hasidim make Kiddush, it's also, they do it with strength and slowly. But, lemaisa in the world, I'm talking about the world at large, in the world at large, a lot of people, they come home from shul, they're hungry, the kids are hungry, it's like barely mumble the words, and yeah, it's nice, and you sit down and you eat. So he's saying that would be, quote-unquote, considered a minor mitzvah. But he's just showing how, if we look at the words of Kiddush, besides for what it's doing spiritually, and the olamos and everything like that, which you have no idea, if you learn Kabbalah, I'm sure you'll get very very inspired by that. But even just the simple words, it's saying, Hashem created the world. 6 days the world was being created. Then Hashem rested. And then in the end, the second paragraph, we mentioned Mitzrayim, how we were in Mitzrayim, and Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim to be His nation. These things are very powerful when you just simply realize what it's saying is that we are now, we went through 6 days, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and now, boom, we're stopping all of our work and we are, you know, crazily enough, just not doing anything for a day. And we're just sanctifying Hashem's name in a million different ways. And it's incredible. I always think about that when I'm like, you know, in the mikvah on Friday, you know, you're in the mikvah Friday afternoon, you're taking a shower, you're getting dressed, it's really nice. You get so used to it, you know, like, yeah, mikvah Friday afternoon. And you like look around, you're like, wait one second. It's 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the afternoon on a Friday afternoon. Why are we getting dressed for a wedding? You know, like imagine you're like somewhere and you're like everyone's like, well, it's 2:30, it's Wednesday, let's go, get dressed for a wedding. You're like, huh? What's going on? No. Because every week the Yidden are like, we're used to it, but it's an incredible experience. We're just sitting there getting ready for, you know, Shabbos is like a little wedding, a little Kabbalah Sitar, it's like everything. So every Friday night when we make Kiddush, we're almost bringing that in a tremendous way. So it seems like a very small mitzvah. And I guess really everything in Yiddishkeit is like that. We get so used to it and we get so that we just swallow our way through the things. When it's something very, like that's what we were saying before, when it's something very rare, like, let's say, you know, lulav or something that's, you know, once a year, you know, a few years ago we had Birkas HaChama, you know, they had crazy, once every 28 years, everyone was...
Was it Blessing of the Sun?
Yeah, the Blessing of the Sun, yeah, it was Erev Pesach.
It
was Erev Pesach, I think it was, around 6 years ago. So everyone was going wild, and you get a Vesikin, and you say the blessing the first second you could, you go crazy, 28 years, you know, how old am I going to be then, you know? And so it's wild, but really, what he's saying is that every little mitzvah that we do, and he gives an example of Kiddush Friday night, is really, if we focus on what it's saying, it's incredible. Unbelievable. That's a little bit Rav Nachman himself when he was also in Kiddush one Friday night. He it's like a story brought down in this forum. He got so caught up in the upper universes in the Olamos when he was about to say Kiddush that he just stood there with the Kiddush cup in his hand and just got, I don't know exactly, so to speak, caught up or lost in the upper worlds. He just stood there in dveikus, in devotion, connected for the entire night. And the Hasidim who were around the table just didn't know what to do. They were just sitting there like in awe. So they just stood there. And they just stood there for the entire night. Till it was basically, I think, daylight, and then the Rebbe finally came back down and he said, oh, Kiddush, you know, and he made Kiddush, something like that. I don't remember the exact end of the story, but the incredibleness was that that's what the Rebbe used to be incredibly davak to Hashem by the time of Kiddush, and that's, so to speak, a simple mitzvah. So we don't know what's a simple mitzvah, what's not. You got to do all of them. The next part of the Mishnah gives us also a little more thing about mitzvahs. You have to calculate the loss of the mitzvah against its reward. Against its reward. Obviously, it's much bigger. So the Bar Tanur explains that you have to make a spreadsheet, a profit loss margin. I don't know exactly. I'm not a businessman. It makes a certain spreadsheet how to deal with the profits and loss. You say, listen, I got to spend $200 to get an awesome Lola of Esrog, Arba Minim, all the stuff together. Right? But how much am I going to get paid back? So I think, wow, probably going to get like 20,000 schar points and all the maba. Okay, it's worth it. You know, basically, a person has to make a cheshbon that he's going to make an accounting for all of this. And Bar Tanura, the words of the Bar Tanura is that he realizes that he's going to get paid back incredible dividends, incredible schar, both in this world and the next. So the question is, that needs a little bit of explaining, meaning, I understand that the Bar Tanura is saying, you know, you think in the next world I'm going to get, who knows, how much dvikas, you know. Instead of thinking about foolish things, even he has a good picture of the next world. He's like, I'm going to be able to understand Torah, Yud Beis and Likutei Moran, like every prat and, you know, something in Likutei Moran or whatever. You know, he makes a good picture in his head of what Hashem's going to give him, and it's going to be unbelievable. I'm going to be sitting, you know, at the table with Moshe Rabbeinu, and an unbelievable thing. Whatever it is he makes up in his mind. But that's going to give him goodness in this world. I understand the next world that'll give him goodness. Why in this world? So one could say that in this world, if you keep the mitzvahs of Hayim, Shema Tishmuel, and society, if you keep the mitzvahs, Hashem says he's going to do good, and that's true. Although we see that it's not always the clear, easy, you know, partying, riches, good that we always want. Sometimes the good comes in different ways, but it's always good. But still, we don't necessarily understand that. But if we look at it from a little different light, we say, now, what is the real good that a person can get in this world? The only real good that a person can get in this world, that is Dveikus for the Kadosh Baruch Hu, like Mesilas Hasharim starts off, right? The main good and the real good in this world is to be Mis'anik with the Ziv Hashchina, with the Kadosh Baruch Hu's glow. And that can even come in this world, very much so. And so if that's the case, so I'm not making a profit margin, you know, loss margin based on, well, I'm spending $200, but I'm going to get, and you know, 120 years, I'm going to get some sort of thing. No, right now, I'm spending $200, but right now, I'm going to have the most beautiful, most awesome pre-Eitz Hadar Kapais Tamar, Anafitz Avos. I'm going to have the most beautiful things, and I'm to do a mitzvah, Arba Minim, and with that, I'm going to be Dovek to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at an incredible level. And that is what I want, and that's the real good in this world. So then, and you understand the words of the Bar Tanura, he says that in this world and the next, when he does this, he realizes that this is really what he wants, and this is really what he's going to get, meaning the connection with HaKadosh Baruch. A wild shot, so to speak, is what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says about this. He says that the truth of the matter is that even if no one gets, if we get absolutely no reward or spiritual gain from the mitzvahs, even physical reward or spiritual gain, we would still have to do the mitzvahs, all of them, with utter simcha. So much so that he says that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give us Gehenim for a mitzvah, we'd still have to do a mitzvah. And Gan Eden for doing a avera, we'd still have to not do the averas. What? It's crazy. Yeah, that is what's called doing the mitzvahs and doing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, no matter what comes out of it. And, I mean, there's a famous story with the Baal Shem Tov that he was told that, you know, he lost his Olam Haba, so he started to dance, and he said, Baruch Hashem, now I have absolutely no reason to do the mitzvahs other than to bring a Kodesh Baruch Hu joy. That's the thing, but he's saying is even deeper. He's saying that even if I'm not going to get any reward, but I'm going to get punishment for doing the will of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we still would have to do a will, because that is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will. And we see such a seemingly wild idea that's brought down with certain tzaddikim when they revealed certain secrets. We know that the Arizal, he said that because he said certain secrets to Rav Chaim Vital, his Talmud, his son passed away. And he said that straight out. And Rav Nachman also said a similar thing, that his only son, Shlomo Ephraim, who he named Shlomo Ephraim because Shlomo was the son of David and Ephraim was the son of Yosef. And Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, he had very, very, very big hopes that this son would be Mamash, the harbinger of Mashiach. And he said because of certain secrets that he revealed, his son passed away. And he said, even though it's really hard, even though we don't understand, we still have to reveal the secrets, and we still have to do the will of Hashem. Even though it seems like, what are you doing? You know, you're reading the secrets and you're getting punished. So why would you do that? Because we don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to do what we have to do. We have to reveal secrets. We have to teach Torah. And the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are perfect. That's what Nachman said about this, and we saw the same thing by the Arizal. And that's what Rav Yisrael Salanter is saying, is that the necessity to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all-inclusive, no matter what happens. The Orioris Eilim asks an amazing question. He says, the last line of the Mishnah told us that we have to be careful to do all the mitzvahs no matter what. And then, a second later, it says, we don't know the schar. And then a second later, and start thinking how much schar you're going to get. Again, the Mishnah is just going, flipping around continuously. It's like a roller coaster here. Because we don't know the schar of mitzvahs. And then it says, think of the loss of a mitzvah commensurate against its schar, against its reward. We just said a second ago, we don't know the reward of any mitzvahs. So why saying now start making a schar thing? So he says that it has to do with the last Mishnah in the fifth parakah of Pirkei Avos, where it says, from tsara agra, according to commensurate with the pain, right? Like it says, they say in working out, no pain, no gain, right? However much push you push in and then it hurts, so to speak, that's how much gain you get. So he says the same thing over here. We don't know the schar of any mitzvah, but however much efforts you have to put into that mitzvah, that's the amount of schar that you're going to get. We have a mechavshid, hefzid mitzvah, meaning, what does hefzid mitzvah now according to this pshat mean? Hefzid mitzvah, the loss that you're feeling from the mitzvah. It could be, you know, the super duper rich guy, he ends up, doing something, giving tzedakah, but it's really, really easy. And some other guy, he gives a shekel to the tzedakah, but to him it like killed him that he had to give that shekel to some collector. So according to that person's pain, that's the schar he gets. That's the schar that mitzvah is going to bring him. Which means that it's basically connected every single person, connected what he where he's holding. The Michtav Meliyahu or Meliyahu Dessler, he always speaks about that a person has a bechiva level. He has a level where he's holding. A guy wakes up in the morning and puts on tefillin, so he's not necessarily going to get reward. Wow, he put on tefillin. Another kid, he hasn't put on tefillin in a year, and he had all sorts of problems with Yiddishkeit and hated it and this, and now he's struggling, he's trying to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he just wakes up and he just puts on tefillin. He's going to get a tremendous reward for that because it's really difficult. He doesn't want to do it. He wants to just take a nap or whatever, go out and start his day. He stops and he takes 5 minutes and puts on tefillin. That guy gets a tremendous reward. That's his bechira level. That's where he's holding on choosing to serve Hashem. And the other guy, he wears tefillin every day, so it's not necessarily he's going to get the star.
What's a good translation for, would you say, bechira?
Bechira. Free choice. Yes, free choice. Right. That's, I was actually searching for it in my word bank, but I don't speak English nowhere, so. So that's the bechira, the free choice. That's where a person is holding that level of free choice. Where he's holding is going to be what also now, according to what he's saying, the Oros Eilim is going to be what defines how much reward. But again, there's also within that there's more to be said because the guy that wakes up every morning and quote unquote just puts on tefillin. So you'd say, okay, for the general shell of something called the mitzvah of putting on tefillin, he gets reward. And he doesn't necessarily have the free choice because that's what he does. It's not for him not to put on tefillin would be super weird, super strange. And so he gets reward for just the shell of the mitzvah. But for him to get into the pnimius of the mitzvah, meaning for him each day, which is really what we're supposed to be doing, to put on tefillin with chiyus, with simcha, with life, with energy, with joy, that he has definitely bechira. And for that, if it's difficult, which I think it's difficult for every single person to do these things on a continual basis, to re-inject and re-infuse life and chios and energy into our mitzvahs, so that's something that I think everyone has the bechira, the free choice for each day and every mitzvah, and that is something that we definitely will get reward for if and when we push a little bit to try to do it. A different way of looking at this reward thing, meaning this questionable idea of, not questionable, but this idea that we're not understanding 100% of where you get, how you define reward, is based on the Imre Emes. He says, it's a kind of famous vort that people say. I saw it from the Imre Emes. He says that we have a glimpse of how what this unknowable reward is. He says that if you ask this yeshiva bacher that wakes up every morning and puts on tefillin, you tell him, listen, you know, today when he wakes up, just don't put on tefillin today. What? Don't put on tefillin. It's a mitzvah. Of course I'm going to put on tefillin. Fine. Here's $100. Just don't put on tefillin today. $100. $100. You bought the mitzvah to say that, right? Are you crazy? $1,000. You want $1,000 here? You know, $1,000 bills straight on the table here. Just take it. Take it. Just don't put on tefillin today. I'm not doing it for $1,000. You go on and on. A guy takes out his suitcase. He's $1,000,000 right here in cash, tax free, right? It's yours. Clean money, unmarked bills. He says, take it. I'm not taking $1,000,000. Fine. Guy walks out. What is that guy now, that buffer that morning he was just going to wake up, stroll out of bed, throw on his tefillin, daven a little bit in the shtibuch, and go on? He says, wait a minute. That's incredible. My mitzvah tefillin that I was just going to slap on and do, it's worth $1,000,000 to me. I'm willing to sacrifice $1,000,000. That means every morning there's a crazy, intense, and big and beautiful value in this world that I have for the mitzvah. That should help a person. That's what he says. They have a mechashev hefsed mitzvah. Calculate. Mechashev could be, it is calculate. Calculate the loss of a mitzvah, meaning how much someone would be willing to pay you to not do the mitzvah, and you wouldn't take it. Keneged tzchara. And that will be the reward that you recognize, wow, I hold that this mitzvah is so precious that I'm willing to go through such a, I'm willing to go to lose so much for the mitzvah. Obviously, it has tremendous value in my heart, in my head. We're moving down to the end of the Mishnah. Got a couple more minutes. Look at three things, if that's right, huh? And you won't come to Avera. Know what is above you. Seeing eye, a ear that hears, and all your things, all your actions are written in the Sefer. Rav Chaim Volozhin says that this is the way to defeat any feelings of conceit that we might get from any levels of prominence. Is always remember that in Shemayim they hear and they see everything, all the ugly things that you did, all the ugly things that you think, and all these things, they hear it, they see it, they know it, and therefore, even if you're sitting in a big blue chair with cushions, don't get all excited, because in Shemayim they know exactly who you are and what you are. Svasemis has a Hasidic twist on the words in classic Svasemis style. He says, Da ma lemala mimcha. Know what is above you. So don't read it like that, but read it. Da ma mimcha ma lemala. Know from yourself what is above. What does that mean? He says that basically, he says this var in different ways, in different Mishnayos. He says that often we go out, we can learn from ourselves how we relate to the world. We go out of our way, we do something really nice to another person, and sure enough, what do we get back? He's ungrateful, he even screams at us, all these things. We say, oh, what an ingrate, what a bad feeling that is to be like, go out of your way, help a guy, and then you just, you feel terrible. So he says, oh, if that's the case, then we should learn from that how we deal with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us and gives us and gives us and gives us. And then, very often, we barely say thank you, we barely, Baruch Hashem, you hear in Rav Arsh's yeshiva, where they're always, Mechazek, tada, you know, to say thanks all the time. So, Ezras Hashem, we're going to do it somewhat. But, in general, compared to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving, literally, we'd be saying, thank you, 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 endlessly, if we really recognize every second of our life. Call neshama talaka, right? It says in the Tehillim, the Gemara says, call neshima talaka, with every breath, really, we should be just breathing in and praising the Kodesh Baruch Hu, not doing anything else. So if we recognize that, there's a story with, right down the block, the Zviller Rebbe, I think it was with Shlomo Zvil, and they said that he used to be able to go into the mikvah. Person would come to him with a question, a really difficult issue, go into the mikvah, come out, give him an answer, Ruach HaKodesh. Right? There's a story that there was someone across town in Bikur Cholim, which is on Rehov Yaakov, I guess it's going back around 100 years, and the Zviller Rebbe was here. I think it was the Zviller Rebbe or the Shoymer Emunim. Not sure exactly which Rebbe. I think it was the Zviller Rebbe. And he used to, the person's wife was in labor. It was very, very dangerous. It looked really like she wasn't giving birth. It wasn't coming out, the baby, and it was very, very scary. And so they didn't know what to do. The doctors didn't know what to do or anything. So he said, I'm running to this village rabbi to ask him what to do. So he started walking towards, across Mei Hashem. He was running basically, it was on Shabbos. He was running towards Mei Hashem, towards Zvil Rebbe. And as he's running down, like a Yecheskel or something, Zvil Rebbe is running up to him. And he says, I was in the mikvah already, and it's going to be a boy, and I was born already, so go back. What? He said, okay. So he turned around, he ran back, and the boy was already born. Mazel tov. So Zvil Rebbe had an unnatural, supernatural koyach for knowing the future based on going to the mikvah. So they once asked him, someone asked him, one of the other tzaddikim, he said, I don't understand where you get such a koyach, you know? What is it? So he told them, it's not a big deal. It's not a big koyach. He said, all you have to do is for 5 years, thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for every breath you have. If you do that, it's a very simple thing, and you'll be able to do the same thing. It's not me, or it's not something big. All you have to do is thank Hashem every breath that you take for 5 years. Okay. Try doing that, you know. But the point is that if we'd really recognize how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing to us, then we'd realize that just like we don't appreciate it when other people take what we give to them and aren't grateful and don't give it back, so we'd be inspired within ourselves to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing for us all the time. And da ma lema da mimcha, know from yourself how you feel when other people do such a thing to you. Mala mala, how you should be acting towards lemala, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being that he's giving us all the good, and we have to just give him back the good by doing his mitzvahs and serving him joyously, which we should be zeichet to do be'ezras Hashem Yisbarach. Shkoyach, guys. We have, I guess, one more week. Finish the mission, be'ezras Hashem. Big mission.